Little Rock.
You're on the air in 3, 2, 1.
This is Wade Rathke, and this is Wade's World. That means it's Friday morning, 9 to 9:30. We're on KABF, 88.3 FM, 100,000 watts of people power, the voice of the people in Arkansas. You can hear this as well on live streaming at www.kabf.org, and within days it'll be a podcast. In Wade's World, we talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Maya Wind, who is going to tell us some things we don't know much about, which is some of what's going on in Israel and the conflicts and controversies and communications there as people in Israel debate how to deal with their future. Maya is an activist with Boycott From Within, and that's something a lot of people don't know about. Maya, welcome to Wade's World.
Thank you for having me.
We're talking to Maya from San Antonio. She's been going around the country speaking to groups about Boycott From Within. So tell us first, what do you mean, Boycott From Within? What are we talking about, Maya?
Right. So Boycott From Within is an Israeli collective that supports the Palestinian boycott. The Palestinian Civil Society came out in 2005 with a call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, otherwise known as BDS, which is basically a movement modeled after the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, basically a call from Palestinian civil society to internationalize the issue and calling out for support from the international community to help put pressure, cultural, economic, and political, on Israel in order to cease its military occupation and bring justice to the Palestinians under Israeli rule and establishing a true democracy in the region. And so Boycott From Within is an Israeli movement that was established to work in solidarity and to amplify the voices of Palestinians calling out for justice and for the world to intervene on their behalf.
And how long has this boycott been in the process of organization at this point?
So the Palestinian Civil Society call came out in 2005, and our group was established shortly after.
Okay, and recently there's been some news, not exactly of the boycott, but there's a lot of attention to a vote by various academics. Is that connected to this kind of boycott from within strategy?
Absolutely. So it's actually great news that the movement is gaining traction worldwide. Even the EU government has recently passed sanctions on settlement products, that is to say products from Jewish-only settlements in the occupied West Bank. And that is just one in a series of moves of people from the government level to the grassroots level of people worldwide, and now also here in the United States, people who are of conscience, who are trying to help us establish a true democracy and justice in Israel-Palestine.
Now, Middle East is a long way from the United States and people in Arkansas and our listeners in KBF. So what? Give us some texture of what the real controversy is. Obviously, people support the State of Israel, but the Palestinian situation is difficult for a lot of people to understand.
Well, actually, I think it's often understood as an incredibly complex issue that you need to have, you know, a PhD in Middle Eastern history to understand. But I actually think it's really quite the opposite. It's an incredibly simple issue. The issue is this. The State of Israel and the Israeli government rules the entire territory from the Jordan River to the sea. In this territory, we have two types of people, Jewish Israelis, who are citizens of the state and get all the rights and liberties that most Americans enjoy and live in a democracy. And at the same time, the other almost half, 45% of the people living in this land under the Israeli rule are actually Palestinians. And most of the Palestinians are not citizens of the State of Israel and live under the Israeli military laws. So they do not enjoy any of the civil liberties that I do. And so this is why many people in the world have come to call the State of Israel in its current form a state of apartheid, because we have one government ruling over two types of people, some with rights and some without rights. And that's really what it comes down to. And what our movement is trying to do is trying to address that and say it's really fairly simple. We don't need to try and carve up the land in a myriad of ways that are so complex and to displace people further and build high walls. All we need really is democracy, one human, one vote. It's a very simple principle. It's been proven to work fairly well, I would say, in many parts of the world. And that's all. That's what we're calling for, just a true democracy where everyone gets to vote, everyone gets to have a say on how their life is going to be governed.
And what would we call the government now?
So, well, right now, I think what we have, unfortunately, is a state of apartheid where the government rules over people, some of which have the vote and have a say, and some of which do not, and do not enjoy any of the civil liberties or civil rights that I do as an Israeli Jew.
So it's more like a pretend democracy.
Right. It's really a facade, yeah, and I think it's a travesty, and it's such a fallacy to call Israel the only democracy in the Middle East when really it's much less democratic than many of our neighbors, certainly if you look southward to Egypt, where the people of Egypt have shown such perseverance, taking to the streets in the most democratic way possible, day after day, facing extreme state violence, to call for democracy. And those voices were heard in Gaza and the West Bank and Jerusalem, where I'm from, and we were very inspired by the Egyptian people to continue to work for a democratic Middle East.
And part of this is sort of paradoxical because obviously Israel has a reputation of very progressive policies in many areas, right? Healthcare and you were telling me some of those policies recently.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do think one thing that I think is really great in Israel is that, and again, this is for Israeli citizens, both Jewish and non-Jewish, but primarily for Jewish citizens. Israel is a very advanced welfare state. We have a very strong socialist tradition in Israel, starting with the immigrants. Israel is an immigrant country, much like the United States. Immigrants from Iran and Iraq, where there was a very strong communist movement, and communist and socialist movement and government even in the 1950s and 60s, and then Jews from the ex-Soviet bloc and from Eastern Europe, all brought with them, and you know, together these groups make up a sizable group in our country. They brought with them a very strong socialist tradition, which has helped us establish a fairly progressive welfare state. Everyone has health care in Israel, something that unfortunately Americans do not enjoy, whether they work or not. And we have a number of rights as workers. Unfortunately, since the 90s, a series of new liberal reforms have been cutting into what was a very rich welfare state, and we're seeing more and more privatization and cutting into those rights. But nonetheless, there are people on the ground resisting that and struggling to keep it a good welfare state, which it used to be.
Now, is there increasing support? I know the European Union has been active in this area. Is there some support for this boycott from European countries?
Yes, there is. There's a number. And in fact, what's been great to see is not only on the government level, which is, of course, fabulous, but also at the grassroots level. So, for example, in the UK and other places, unions of workers at the ports, at the docks, refused to unload Israeli cargo that was from the settlements, the Jewish settlements in the West Bank. And a number of organizations and people have boycotted, and, you know, from also consumers, individual consumers in supermarkets. I think what needs to be addressed is just that really for years, the reason the boycott movement was formed in 2005 was in a response to the fact that for the last two decades, millions upon millions of dollars in a variety of forms of aid have been poured into Israel and Palestine, into civil society organizations, into NGOs. And yet, if you ask almost any Israeli or any Palestinian, when do you feel you have been better off, today or in the 90s, they will all invariably say it's been better off before and it's only getting worse for everyone on all sides. And so I think what the Palestinians have come to is to say the peace talks are leading nowhere. That's just a facade for Israel to continue to build settlements and expand its apartheid regime. Israel has never been sincere about these peace talks. It's not now either, despite all the hard work that Kerry seems to be doing. And so the Palestinian civil society came out and said, what we need is a change of tactics. And what they've done really cleverly is to follow this issue to the source. And this issue is not really about some sort of epic religious or cultural war. It's not even about two people fighting over one single piece of land. What it's really about is money. And that's what it comes down to, unfortunately. So they followed the money. And so this campaign is really trying to cut off this issue known as a conflict at the source, which is money, to target the institutions and the Israeli elite that are profiting in a very direct way from our military occupation of the Palestinian people. And so what we have going on really in Israel-Palestine is a form of a laboratory where the Israeli state and the Israeli military industrial complex tests out a number of weapons and what's called security technologies, counterinsurgency, counterterrorism technologies that we as a state have been so proud of developing and have really been marketing ourselves as the global leader in counterterrorism. And what we have been doing is we have been testing these out regularly on Palestinians over the last decades and then selling them to the world. The Israeli weapon industry is a huge industry in Israel. It generates over $7 billion in exports alone. And this is just the weapons. This is not all of the other types of security technologies we produce and sell abroad. And so what the BDS movement is trying to address is just that, is to say stop testing weapons and technologies on us. And also it's important to say it's not just the Palestinians who are suffering because of this. The Israeli working class, the Jewish Israeli working class, is also a victim of the system. We are not reaping any of the benefits that the military elite in our country are from this laboratory that we are running in Palestine. It's really just the elites, and so most people, working class people, people of color in Israel, are not at all benefiting from this system.
Well, and that raises an interesting question. We're talking today on Wage World with Maya Wind of Boycott From Within about the situation involving Israel and Palestinians. But in talking about the lack of advantages the working people of Israel are getting, you were telling me recently about a very interesting organization called, what, Power to the Workers or something like that? I can't remember the exact name. I did look it up on the web. Tell us about that organization, because that's something people should know about as well, and then we'll get back to the boycott.
Right. So Power to the Workers is a fabulous movement established by Israelis and Palestinians, and it's really sort of the first of its kind in that regard. And it's basically a workers' union. We've had unions since the dawn of our state, and sort of the largest union, which is sort of government, run union of the workers, is really much more working for the government these days than for the people, for the workers. And so it's become too embedded in politics and too institutionalized. And so Power to the Workers really came up as a sort of grassroots movement to unionize workers. And what they do is they come to unionize anyone who asks, basically, and come with their expertise and with their knowledge and help people form unions and fight for the rights that they should deserve as workers. And so what's great about this movement is that it really unionizes Israeli Jews, but also have tried to unionize Palestinians, both citizens of the state of Israel, who often suffer discrimination because they are not Jewish, and even going into the Palestinian territories and trying to unionize Palestinian workers. It's important to say that the Israeli economy and the Israeli state relies very much on, in many ways, the absolutely unpaid or underpaid, sometimes unpaid, labor of Palestinian men primarily who are coming in from the West Bank into Israel to work. And through a series of checkpoints and a permit system, we maneuver them in such a way that they are rendered uncertain. It's a very precarious situation. And since unemployment in the West Bank is 70% and poverty is severe, what happens is that Palestinians are desperate to work and feed their families. And so and desperately need the permits that Israel grants them quite arbitrarily in order to enter Israel and work, doing work like construction, cleaning, cooking, all of the work that is undervalued and underpaid. And because they are so desperate to work and because they need these permits so badly, they never have the legal status to complain if they are mistreated or underpaid, which they most often are. And this is not to even mention the Palestinians who enter without permits, who sidestep the wall, sidestep checkpoints, and sneak into Israel regularly to work illegally. Everyone knows that they're there. The government knows that they're there. And no one thinks of them as a security threat, even though the wall was supposed to stop Palestinians from entering. Palestinians still continue to regularly enter, and no one knows, and everyone knows that they're not really a threat. And they're there really to serve as our class of underpaid laborers because they are completely desperate for a job and have no legal status, so they cannot complain if they are being mistreated.
That sounds a little bit like the United States. And the United States has a big role in Israel and is very important in settling this dispute. And in many ways, as much publicity as Secretary of State John Kerry is getting for wading back into this Middle East situation and trying to push for peace, it's the view of some Israelis, and I think you've expressed this, Maya, that if the United States stepped up more aggressively, they could make sure a settlement did happen. Am I misstating that, or what is the United States' role in trying to get something to happen here?
Well, I think it's important for the American public to hear that their government, that, you know, you are all not spectators. You are all actually active members, sort of, in a way, active supporters of this regime, unfortunately, because your tax money is going in a very direct way to help us. So the United States has, for many, many years now, been giving $3 billion a year in military aid alone. And the other forms of aid that we get as a state from the United States, it amounts to about $15 billion in money a year to Israel. And it's important to say that Israel is the number one recipient of foreign aid of the United States worldwide, despite the fact that we are a developed country with the strongest economy of the Middle East. We have an economy stronger than all of the economies of our Arab neighbors combined. And so we still receive so much aid, and so that's one thing. Israel is totally propped up economically by the United States. In addition, the United States has been our diplomatic support. So any resolution that the international community has been trying to pass to hold Israel accountable to the international law that it regularly breaks, and to hold Israel accountable to the human rights abuses that it commits, the United States has always stepped up and vetoed that resolution time and again. And so in so many ways, the United States is our last bastion of support in the world, and is providing us a number of ways with support for this regime. And so it's important for the American public to think about what could be done with $15 billion in the United States. Where could that go for you? You're working hard. You're paying your taxes. That money should go back to you. It should not be going to support a foreign regime, certainly not an undemocratic regime on the other side of the world. And that's something I think the American public should think about.
Unfortunately, we support lots of undemocratic regimes around the world. But it is an important point you're making because, you know, observing from afar, from thousands of miles away, it's always confusing to Americans that every time we try to get the parties together, there'll be some sort of, as we're getting ready to sit down at the table, there'll be another announcement from the Israeli government of more settlement, more houses being built in disputed territory. And it always seems like every time we sit down, there's a snub in our face, even for trying to make the peace process work, yet we play such a strong role in the economy.
Right, and the economy, and also diplomatically. I mean, the United States has hardly been a fair broker in this peace process since it began. It's always been an Israeli ally first and foremost, which is why I think the United States is also not the best entity to be doing this brokering in the first place. But I think because it's so clear that Israel is, in many ways, America's base in the Middle East, the United States relies on Israel for a number of things, for military knowledge and intelligence, for some weapon development, and also for having just a base in the Middle East, which is very convenient for the United States' interests as well. And so it's important to mention it's not just charity. The United States gets something in return. But unfortunately, the Palestinians are the ones at whose expense this whole exchange between the two countries is happening.
I'm talking to Maya Wend, an activist with Boycott From Within in Israel. Maya, you've been going throughout the United States. You're on a long tour trying to actually do the same thing we're doing here on Wade's World, is give people some more texture and context to understand what's going on in Israel. Where have you been thus far? How have you been received?
We started out in northern New York State, and we've made our way down the East Coast all the way to New Orleans, where I met you, and then and then west. And so now we're in Texas, and we'll continue to head west into New Mexico and Colorado and Arizona, California, and then up to Washington State, where we'll end in May. So we've really been speaking to a variety of audiences, church groups, unions, university campuses, and I think a lot of people in this country are getting on board and are understanding that the Israeli regime today is really not inventing anything new. It's really just doing what other regimes have done prior. And I think to the American audience, they understand segregation very well. You've all experienced it before, and you've all decided that that was not the way that you wanted to run your country. And thankfully, you've moved beyond that. And so what we're asking you to do is to help us move beyond our segregation and to give everyone the same rights and let everyone walk on the same streets and ride the same buses. Today, in the apartheid regime, there are Jewish roads only. There are Jewish buses only. There are Jewish gated communities. There are many communities and many spaces in the public sphere that Palestinians cannot enter. We have total segregation, much like in the South in the 1950s. And so what we are calling for in our movement is to stop this and to just unite everyone under one democracy, because Israel has no intention to leave the Palestinian territories, and yet it wants to be a Jewish state with a Jewish majority. And this is why we have an apartheid regime, because we refuse to give up these territories, but we also refuse to grant the civil rights and the citizenship to the Palestinians living on them. And that's a problem. Israel cannot have one and the other. And so since it has no intention to leave these territories, as it's making abundantly clear by the fact that every day more and more settlement units are being approved for building and are being constructed as we speak, more settlements, Jewish settlements, that is, on Palestinian disputed territory, are being built, then we're saying if you don't want to, our movement is basically saying if you don't want to move these settlements and if you're building more and more Jewish settlements in these territories, then do the only democratic thing that there is to do, give citizenship and give the full civil rights and civil liberties to all the Palestinians living on these territories as well, and not just to the Jewish settlers living on these territories.
Obviously, taking a model from the South African efforts and the boycott there, that took years, and a lot of it finally broke down just because the white population was so small. How does that compare to the situation now in Israel between Israelis who are citizens and Palestinians who are in this sort of undocumented non-citizen situation?
Well, unfortunately, in many ways, the South African apartheid regime was less sustainable than ours. Right now, from the Jordan to the sea, the territory which Israel controls, we have about 55% who are Jews and 45% who are Palestinian. Now, some of these Palestinians are actually citizens of the state, but the vast majority of them are not. And so we really have almost half of the population. And so in terms of that, we are a little bit more sustainable. We are also much more powerful economically and militarily, and I think diplomatically we have been. However, the world is waking up, and, people talk a lot about how long it took, and it's true. It took the South Africans several decades to get the world on board to boycott the apartheid regime. They started organizing around the boycott at the time in the 60s, and so it definitely took a while. However, if you think about the South African model, it's actually a source of hope, because our movement has actually seen much success in much less time. I think the world is more global than it used to be. Information travels more easily. People can really be exposed to the truth of what's going on in Israel-Palestine much more easily today, I think, through social media and through television and internet. And so I think what we're seeing is that people are mobilizing much more, and that we've seen a series of wonderful successes of boycotts, from consumer boycotts to government sanctions and government withdrawals to divestment from international, multinational, or Israeli corporations that are profiting in a direct way from the weapon industry or from the security complex that we have or from the occupation of Palestinian people. So I think we've actually had a lot of success in our movement so far, and that's what we're here to do. We're here to urge the American public, don't stop. The American public has played such an important role in the downfall of the South African apartheid regime, and we hope that the American public will do the same and aid us establish justice in Israel-Palestine.
Well, a lot of Americans aren't buying highly sophisticated military equipment. So what exactly could they boycott, Maya?
Well, in terms of consumer boycotts, that's more relevant for other parts of the world, like Europe, where a lot of the produce, we don't sell anything to our Arab neighbors, so we sell most of our produce abroad to Europe.
Interesting.
And so that's more relevant there. However, there is one campaign that's right now going on in the United States, sort of very kind of a bourgeois thing, so I don't know how many people buy it, but it is an Israeli company called SodaStream, and it's a sort of make it at home kind of soda.
Oh, I know it. I know it very well. We use SodaStream at Fairgrinds Coffee House.
Right. So that's one consumer boycott that we are running in the United States. That SodaStream has been marketing itself as a sort of a eco-friendly alternative to Coca-Cola, which is of course a terrible corporation and should be boycotted. The only problem is that SodaStream neglects to mention that its company is actually in the West Bank. It's an Israeli company, and its manufacturing facility is in the West Bank, where it employs Palestinians. In bad conditions, and really is just on Palestinian confiscated land to begin with. And so we try to boycott that. So in terms of consumer boycotts, that's one thing. But really, in the United States, it's less about consumer boycotts because consumer boycotts will not be felt as much because there's really not many products that we sell here.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more about divestment. And so the Methodists and the Presbyterians and other church movements have really done great work in trying to get divestment bills going. The churches in the United States were also very important in the anti-apartheid movement in the 80s. University campuses, that's a great place to organize. The Students for Justice in Palestine movement now has over 100 chapters on college campuses and universities across the country. Really, in every state, there are Students for Justice in Palestine chapters mobilizing on their campus to educate their peers and have their schools divest from companies, and I really think it's all about holding corporations in this country accountable to what they're doing, because there are many American corporations that are profiting in a very direct way from the occupation and are helping Israel in continue this regime. And so I think it's more about creating public pressure and creating awareness in the United States to help us pressure these companies and to shame them for their involvement. I think that's much more what the American public can do.
Exactly. So are there some universities or others that have joined the divestment campaign? Give us some names.
Well, there's the only university that has fully divested as a university is Hampshire College in Massachusetts. They were the first university to fully divest from anything to do with the Israeli regime in Palestine, and they divested from several companies. There's also now, I don't know if you know, TIA Cref is a large pension fund.
It's huge, yeah.
Yeah, so TIA Cref, there's one big, very big national campaign that is run by Jewish Voice for Peace. I urge you all to check it out if you are using TIA Cref as your pension fund, and that's a university fund as well. And a lot of professors have mobilized around that at Columbia University and many other universities across the country. NYU and other professors have mobilized to call TIA Cref to divest because TIA Cref is invested, although it markets itself as a socially responsible investment pension fund, it actually is invested in five corporations. One of them is Elbit Systems, which is an Israeli corporation that has built the wall and does a lot of weapon technology in Israel-Palestine, and in fact also is one of the main contractors of building the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. So people who are concerned about Mexican laborers and the wall and the militarization of the U.S.-Mexico border, Elbit Systems, an Israeli company, is also involved in that.
Gotcha.
Other companies like a subsidiary of Motorola, and another one is Caterpillar, which creates special bulldozers to help.
So that's TIA Cref, and we've been talking to Maya Nguyen. Maya, how can people get a hold of you if they want more information about this fascinating topic?
Great. So I urge you to check out our website for the tour, which also has a lot more resources, and you can also reach out to us if you have any questions or if you want to invite us to come speak to your communities. It's www.soldierandrefusenik, Refusenik spelled refusenik.com.
Thank you. We've been talking on Wage World to Maya Nguyen of Boycott from Within, and we've learned a huge amount about Israeli and Palestinian situations in the Middle East. We're on from 9 to 9:30 every Friday. This has been Wade's World at KBF 88.3 FM, the voice of the people. Thank you. We'll see you next Friday.
On the air and online since 1984, community radio for Arkansas and beyond, 88.3 KABF Little Rock.
The following program is made possible in part by Organic Valley.